Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, January 23rd. How do you like your democracy now? A convicted felon releases other convicted felons from jail. This isn't some streaming show on Amazon Prime. It's real. And so is digital health, which we're going to talk about today with Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Merchants, a partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you two doing this morning? Dave?
Well, let me check with my digital twin. Wow. Turns out I'm feeling great. My readiness score for this morning is a very solid 80 out of 100. So let's go.
Sounds like you had a good night's sleep, right?
Evidently, yeah, 86%.
Good job. Julie, how are you?
Well, for all of you in the polar vortex, Seattle has been beautiful this week. It's a balmy 30 degrees. So if you want to come out for a little warm weather, please join me. And the long weekend was super therapeutic. Yeah. So I hope others felt the same.
T-shirt and shorts weather for me. That's great. Thanks, Julie. Okay, before we talk about these three new developments in digital health, I wanted to ask you about your latest digital health experiences. Dave, anything new to report on your digital health front?
A lot, actually. One of our Foresight Health writers, Keith Hollihan, and I are writing a book on longevity and scientific wellness with leaders of a company called Optispan in Seattle. They put Keith and I through their Trailblazer program, which incorporates rigorous assessment and monitoring. So I've become much better and more informed on lifestyle choices. And so tech is coming into my life daily, just like I told you my readiness score. For example, eating oatmeal spikes my glucose like I'm climbing Mount Everest. Who knew, right?
Oatmeal, that's supposed to be like one of the miracle foods, right? That and blueberries will keep you alive till you're 100.
Well, so they say, but it turns out we all have personal biomes that react differently. So pop health measures don't always work on an individual basis.
Wow. Wow. That's interesting. Julie, how about you? Any new digital health experiences you want to share?
Well, I'm so glad you asked, because when I was in San Francisco last week, I had to make a quick visit to the urgent care, which was crazy and out and fine. But the experience made me actually appreciate Epic just a tad. It's the horror, I know. So I went to a Sutter facility and I signed up for my chart. And lo and behold, there were all of my records from most of my years living in San Francisco. And I haven't even seen some of these records. So I honestly was giddy. And I don't know. I can't believe I'm saying this, but
you need to get out more, Julie, man.
I was so appreciative of Epic. It was crazy. And I had to kind of come back to earth. But I'll just say, Epic, transferring those records from the Sutter MyChart to One Medical was just annoying and an utter waste of time. So, I mean, we, like, come on, get with the program. It can be easier these days. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah. Interoperability, yeah. Right? That's great. Well, here's mine. I don't think doctors look at your patient portal at all to coordinate your care. I have my annual visits with my primary care doc and my cardiologist coming up, and they both ordered essentially the same blood test before each visit. So I called their offices and asked if they could drain me one time and share the results with both doctors, and they said, yes, of course, right? So maybe my mom was right. I could have been a doctor.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Dave, you said you could be a surgeon, right, after that program you took at Mayo?
So I said I could be a surgical mechanic, because I just don't think it's that complicated for many procedures.
Or at least have gotten my master's degree in digital health. And there's your transition. I'm going to share three big digital health headlines from the past week, and you're going to tell me what they mean for digital health today and in the year ahead. We could still do that. It's still January, right? Here are the three headlines. First, Rock Health released its year-end digital health funding report. It said venture capital investment in digital health dipped slightly in 2024 to $10.1 billion from $10.8 billion in 2023. There was a notable uptick in funding for digital health tools for consumer health information. That rose to $1 billion from about half that in 2023. Second, a study in JAMA said 81% of older adults use digital health technologies. By older, they mean ages 50 through 80, so that's at least two of us on today's show. The most popular digital health tech used by seniors are portals, telehealth, and mobile health apps, with the most popular health apps being focused on exercise. And third, a couple of health services researchers, including Eric Topol from Scripps, published a viewpoint in JAMA that called for the creation of a standard Master's of Digital Health degree offered by universities. They said, quote, "There is a critical gap in the leadership, education, and training of professionals capable of effectively integrating these technologies in healthcare," close quote. What does it all mean? I don't know. That's why we have you two. Dave, any specific reactions to any of those three headlines? And what do they say collectively about where we are and where we're going with digital health?
Well, let me take them individually and then wrap it up with a succinct, powerful conclusion. The Rock Health 2024 year-end overview used the title Davids and Goliaths. I like that title for obvious reasons. I bet you do too, Dave.
Yeah, loved it.
And what they're talking about with Davids and Goliaths are that investments are disproportionately going to earlier stage companies, so seed, series A and B rounds, and that those investments are disproportionately being funded by the big mega healthcare players like AZ16 and General Catalyst. So earlier and big players, that tells me the market is actually maturing, which I think is a good thing. I'd be curious whether Julie agrees. The tourist dollars are gone. You know, I happen to be writing a piece right now called Revenue Cycle Dystopia, Olives with No Juice. And it's,
I like that too.
Yeah, about the rise and fall of olive health, you know, and they were the pride of Columbus, Ohio. At one point were worth $4 billion, or valued at $4 billion, took hundreds of millions in investments. And I listened to a podcast to prep for this article, and Sean Lane, the CEO, talked about how they pivoted 21 times. And I was just, I just couldn't believe the general level of idiocy that I was listening to and how the market supported that. So I think, you know, the serious people are the ones making the bets. They're more confident in what they're doing, and they're playing earlier rather than later. And the later's interesting too, because I think later stage checks indicate that getting to scale is proving to be harder than probably most expected. That probably augurs for more M&A in 2025 to combine capabilities to try to jump that technology chasm. I do like the other thing the Rock Health report indicated was an increase in investments going into consumerism. That's a great trend. The study about 81% of older adults using digital health technology, I'm actually surprised the number is that low. To me, it should be in the mid-90s. The fact it's not, probably two reasons there. It's self-reported data, but it includes portal use. So that means apps. Who in the world isn't using apps? I mean, this is basically saying 20% of the population, that population isn't using apps. I would have thought that would be higher by now. And it also includes caregiver use of digital health technologies. So there isn't independence. So the fact you got caregivers and apps, I guess they excluded internet searches, but I think that number should be higher. So lots of room for improvement there. And then in terms of the master's in digital health, you know, on the surface, that sounds like a good idea, you know, professionalizing digital health like we did with financial advice and other services like that that require some skill and expertise. But because it's healthcare, I'm wondering if this wouldn't become just another vehicle for medical professionalism that will ultimately drive up prices and limit access. Shouldn't we all be masters of our digital health? Isn't technology going to make that happen? You know, I like the phrase gradually, then suddenly. How did you go bankrupt gradually, then suddenly? Well, here, how did we get to consumer health? I think we've been doing it gradually, and we're a lot closer to the suddenly stage than most people appreciate.
Thanks, Dave. Julie, any questions for Dave?
You know, Dave, it's so interesting. I read that adults report in almost the opposite way, that 81% was actually pretty high, but mostly because I'm thinking about multiple, you know, all populations, all age groups, and there's still a big swath of the world who are not in your camp using technology. So
yeah,
when I look at like those who are investing in or really trying to transform healthcare through consumerism, they tend to go after the big financial problems, like clinically cancer, heart disease, like, you know, the populations, those people who are not going after commercial, but going after Medicare and frankly, Medicaid. But if you look at this data, it's those who are close to Medicare age are power users, those with high education and financial resources. Those are the people who are reaping the benefits of digital health. And this doesn't mean that others aren't reaping benefits through other like digital health adoption in the system, but they're not necessarily engaged consumers. So I don't know, like your opinion's so different than mine and about this, but do you think we should actually be taking consumer facing digital health and applying it to these populations, to the Dave Johnsons of the world, and just kind of forget about the Medicaid population for a while? Or should we be trying to work on everybody?
Well, ultimately, I think the two paths come together. I'd probably focus a little less on the disease-specific options, although they're really important. And how do we as a country get people to embrace more health so we need less healthcare? The book I mentioned at the top of the show, it's got a working title called The Coming Health Wave, Principles and Practices of Optimizing Health and Extending Lifespan. I do think we're on the cusp of a coming health wave in that the tools and the need are going to come together. The core features of what we need to do to advance health are really pretty well understood. The question is, how do we scale this to encompass a much higher percentage of the overall population? You know, we've got the early adopters, people like you and me, even Berta. So if we're looking at ROI, Julie, I'd hone in on companies that are hitting cheaper, better, balanced, easier, and empowering.
I'm still struggling with the fact that they define older adults as ages 50 through 80. I got an issue with that. Okay.
No comment.
Yeah. All right, Julie, you're up. Any of those three headlines you want to comment on specifically, and how do they collectively mirror what you're seeing and experiencing in the market?
Well, given what I see in my day job, the Rock Health report resonates. I mean, the AI frenzy that they noted is everywhere, whether companies are AI native or AI first companies building on, you know, from the ground up on LLMs to solve a specific problem, or maybe a more generic platform, or the incumbents going wild, or some of our partner companies leapfrogging their capabilities by applying AI. I mean, it's everywhere. So when I read that AI-enabled startups made up 37% of overall this year's overall funding, I thought, gosh, it feels like it's so much more. But that actually feels like maybe a more controlled percentage of funding than the frenzy that, you know, is out there. And, you know, certainly even some of the most recent acquisitions you're seeing of startups that, you know, had big valuations back in the heyday of 21 and 22, you know, those pressures are coming around. And even though I think every year we talk about this is going to be the year for M&A, I actually really do think this is going to be the year for M&A. So a lot of what Rec Health talked about resonated, but the headline that really caught my eye was the Master of Digital Health degree. And first, you know, the industry's been on this journey the past few years to wipe the word digital from digital health because, you guys, it's just health, right? It's not digital health. So this, I thought, was a bit of a 180. But second, I think more importantly, while I literally initially laughed out loud when I saw this headline, I think I'm now in 100% after reading more about it. And here's why. Any digital health, quote unquote, expert today is an expert through their own lens. You have the digital health technical people and the clinical experts, or those who really understand the operational impact, or those of us who think about the business models. you know, the expertise for digital health is so fragmented, and we don't all ever really come together to look at how to actually solve a problem with all of our expertise. We really like to bite off our own piece of this big elephant. So when you look at what certainly health systems talk about as being the biggest challenge in digital health, it's really change management. They won't talk about the business model challenges, of course. So they talk about change management. And, you know, whether it's clinician resistance or territorial technologists or siloed operators, everyone thinks they're right because they all use their lens. So, you know, how can we change management when everyone digs in their heels? So one of the best hires I've ever seen in the industry is Neem Gandhi at Mass General Brigham in Boston. Neem was a chief population health officer, and I think also ended up being combined with chief financial officer at Mount Sinai for a number of years. And MGB hired him to be just their CFO. Brilliant move. Because who knows better how to cut or reallocate or spend money to improve care than the pop health guy? I mean, this guy knows it, right? And Neem will be the first to tell you that he's not the finance wizard, but he does know where to find value and make health happen. So this is the kind of digital health leader we need, someone who has a more all-encompassing education that's coming from one angle, is educated on another, can see it from all angles. So this is why I say I'm a fan. Neem is not the digital health example, but he is the example of taking someone out of one expertise and putting it in another. And this program, this education program, could cross-educate a lot of people who are already in healthcare and bring a lot of new brains in to have a more comprehensive digital health understanding to move us forward. So maybe we should make the slogan, healthcare needs you.
Yeah. Standardize and elevate. That's a great perspective. Thanks, Julie. Dave, any questions for Julie?
Well, I'm just sitting here wondering who's paying for Neem's psychiatrist, right? As he's trying to bring pop health into the to the Brigham and Mass General, that is an organization is probably more committed to charging the most money possible for the most complex procedures. But the world is full of strange bedfellows, right? And I do think the world of him too, Julie. So kudos there. I think you might have the best insider's perspective of anybody I know on the current state of digital health tools, or should we just call them health tools? So what's the most innovative tool or company that you've seen that nobody's talking about? And how will it change the healthcare world as we know it?
Easy question for you.
Yeah. So, Dave, first I'll say, you know, when I think about novel technology, I think about a lot of cost savings more than I think about clinical advancement. And that's, you know, because of the world that I think we talk about every week, right? So some of the consultants in the industry or thought leaders talk a lot about supply chain as a huge problem. We've seen like a run on sailing bags because of the hurricane that hit, you know, Tennessee and the Carolinas. You know, supply chain is looked at as being the place to really drive costs down. I don't think a lot about supply chain, but we've certainly looked deeply at it. I think there's a lot of nascent tools there, but there's one little piece of supply chain that nobody ever talks about. You'll never hear the CEO of a health system talk about DME, durable medical equipment. And I've talked about this before on the show. But I think technologies like some of these DME solutions that are just streamlining and taking the craziness out of phone calls and faxing and, you know, frankly, lack of being able to get the right equipment to the home on a timely basis that actually is, you know, funded by that patient's health plan. It's a nightmare. So I see innovations in that space that are very exciting to me, and no one's talking about it.
That's interesting because, you know, I tried to get a walker to my mom's house after she had back surgery, and I could write a book about it, right? It's a simple thing.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be a lot simpler if I just went to the store, bought it myself, and brought it to her house.
But, well, let me tell you, when you talk to health systems today, and you actually get into these conversations, they'll tell you, you know what? A bunch of our people just call Amazon and have it delivered because it gets there faster. So then, I mean, think about what's the money bleeding out of the systems. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Don't you think we need a master's in durable health equipment to just make this problem go away?
Maybe that can be a whole special course at University of Tobol.
That's great. Exactly. Okay, let's talk about other big healthcare news that happened this past week. I was going to say it wasn't all bad, was it? But I think it was all bad. Well, let's see. Julie, what else happened that we should know about?
Well, I don't know how many people knew him, but Paul Mango, who was a really big guy at McKinsey and was leading this Longitude Health, this new kind of multi-system MSO is what I like to call it, but Providence, Baylor Scott & White, Novant, a few others all involved in this. Paul was like a big brain, definitely a thought leader and a powerful force, died last week at the age of 65. And this guy, I mean, if you talk to anybody who knew him, he was in top shape, like incredible. So hug your loved ones. You know, it's a sad day when things like that happen.
Yeah, I saw a lot of tributes to him on LinkedIn. So, yeah, that's a huge loss. Dave, what other news is worth mentioning?
No, it's the same news. And you said everything bad. Well, it's bad and sad. Bad for the industry and very sad. I was talking to Pete McKenna this week, who's the chair of Longitude Health. He's the CEO at Baylor Scott & White, and said Paul was at their home in Jackson Hole and his wife hadn't heard from him for a couple of days and had a neighbor go check. And there he was, dead on the floor in his kitchen.
Oh,
you know, it just tells you how sudden it was. 2 weeks ago, I was talking to Brett Morasky, the number two at Longitude Health. And I was getting up to speed on that because it's such an interesting initiative.
Yeah.
And Brett and I talked a little bit about whether or not Paul was going to go back into government because he was in the first Trump administration, very involved in Project Warp Speed, wrote a book about it. You know, he ran for governor of Pennsylvania. I mean, it's just bad for the industry that we're not going to have him trying to help us all figure this out. So,
yeah.
Our thoughts are with his family. So, thanks for mentioning that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dave, and thanks, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to The Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.